The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
Want to know the first thing I bought for myself when I was going through my divorce?
What's that?
New sheets.
Oh, I bet.
Friends, don't sleep on those old sheets that you shared with your ex. Yuck. You deserve some luxury in your life, and what better way than treating yourself to one of Oprah's coveted favorite things?
We're talking about Cozy Earth sheets. So soft, so luxurious. Go to CozyEarth.com, and you can save up to 35% if you use the code HNTSAD.
That stands for How Not to Suck at Divorce. Cozy Earth sheets, where dreams come true.
You're not allowed to interject your point of view. Your only job as the receiver is to fucking shut up and listen.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
All right, so I'm kind of having anxiety tonight, but I'm watching you drink wine and I'm feeling better already.
Oh my God, you're having anxiety? Have we switched places?
Yeah, it appears that way. So here's my anxiety. It's so stupid, but you know, anxiety hits in different ways. But okay, so next week is Thanksgiving already. Wonderful. Great. But I feel like Thanksgiving, I celebrate Christmas. They're like stacked on top of each other. And it feels like it's just like one giant holiday. And I'm a firm believer of not decorating for Christmas until Thanksgiving is done. But now I feel like I have to break my own rule because this weekend is going to be nice and I've got to like get everything out and like get it all set up so that I have my shit together. And so I'm feeling overwhelmed. And I saw this meme and it just reminded me, I'm like, this is exactly what I'm feeling. It says Thanksgiving and Christmas should be 6 months apart. Absurd to see those people again so soon. Absurd. Like,
I saw that today.
Mm-hmm. Who needs to see their family? Like,
again,
family twice right away.
And I think the other thing is that you plan Christmas at Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So it's like you're at Thanksgiving trying to get through that situation and they're already asking you, so who's bringing what to Christmas?
Yeah.
You're like, bitch, we're not even done with this.
Yep.
I 100% hear you. And I think that what this really speaks to is, you know, for people like us who do a million different things, we have more than one job, we are working all the time. It's like you add on to that mom pressure of like doing everything for everybody and having the house decorated and having like things that are nice for other people in your world. And it's like that is the icing on top of the cake that I never wanted to bake. Right?
Yes. I mean, I just kind of feel inadequate, but also like overwhelmed to the point where I'm like, F it. I'm not doing anything. Like, I'm not getting anything out. I don't give a shit what happens. Like, whatever.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have we dove into immediately you're over it for the week?
Yeah, that's what
like,
I'm
is
over.
That, because we like went right into that.
So there's something I have to get off my chest because I'm just so over it.
Oh my God, me too. Okay, scale of 1 to 10, how over it are you?
11, how about you?
12.
Okay, well then I gotta hear this.
Before I got on here to record, I was thinking to myself, all right, I got to get a game plan for like Christmas gifts. Like what exactly does everyone need? Because everyone knows Black Friday is like the day you've got to get it done. It's beyond.
Wait a minute. That makes me think of a question. I don't even know that I know this about you, but I'm guessing you're not a Black Friday shopper, right? Like you don't.
Online, girl. Online.
But that's Cyber Monday. That's not Black Friday.
Oh, I'm all about Black Friday because the deals start coming out online Black Friday.
Okay.
Cyber Monday, I got to go to work. Black Friday, I'm off.
Okay. So I want to know now, mm-hmm. What are you buying?
I don't know. I'm in this like weird stage with kids that like, I'm not sure what they want or like, or, you know, it's like one of those things. So I'm trying to think of any ideas. You know what I found helpful is asking friends who have similar age children, what are you buying? And then at least I get one idea out of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, what about for the husband?
He's getting
nothing. Do you have any ideas? Nothing?
Nothing. Maybe a
stocking. Damn, girl.
Maybe a stocking.
Okay.
In my house, I'd rather save all my money and travel everywhere than buy.
Yeah, bet it. Stuff. You guys are traveling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys are traveling type people.
What are you thinking? And like,
so, okay, so in a similar boat, as far as Steve is concerned, I mean, we're looking to buy a house soon. Mm-hmm. So this is not the year where it's going to be razzle-dazzle me with, you know, I was about to say diamonds and pearls, but I forgot that I just literally got a ring from the poor guy a few months ago. So, right. So I got that. The one thing that I ordered for him so far, it's really cheesy, but it's perfect for him because he's obsessed with our dog. Mm-hmm. And he is obsessed with the fleecy, fuzzy pajama pants. Like, he actually wears those.
He is
like Mr. Rogers. As soon as he gets home from work, he strips off his work clothes and puts these ridiculous pajama pants on every single day. So I got him, it's like a stupid little, like, tiny little gift, but it's pajama pants with our dog's face all over them. So embarrassing, so stupid, but I know him. He'll open it and he'll be like, oh my God, I love this. And we'll laugh at it and he'll be like, I'm never wearing these. I'm like, no, I know. Like, it was basically $40 to be like, ha, 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 you know.
Steve,
that's what I've got.
Steve, thanks for letting us make fun of you today.
Love that. I love that.
You don't even know. You don't even know we're making fun of you today.
No.
But we appreciate it.
No. I would love it even more if you listened to the damn show.
And liked it.
Really support it. Yeah, liked it.
How about a comment?
Maybe subscribe. A review. Would it kill you? Maybe you'd get a nicer gift. For the kids, they're into like all the games, like Roblox and all roadblocks, I don't know, something like that. So that's all they want is stuff for that. I don't know. It's stressing me out. So I'm with you. And the one thing that I have to complain about this week, and it is your week for over it, but I have to chime in because I was just feeling disappointed in my heart. I was at Costco over the weekend and they had this box of like deluxe liqueur filled chocolates.
Ooh.
Right? And it was expensive. It was $20 for a box of chocolates. So as Forrest Gump would say, you never know what you're going to get. Well, I'll tell you what you're going to get. A bunch of bullshit in this box.
What?
Terrible. Every single one of them. Friends.
But you bought it.
Well, because I didn't fucking open it and eat it inside of a Costco. How are you going to know what it tastes like if you don't buy it? Morgan, I was so sad.
I'm so sorry, but there's a bug walking towards me, and I got to handle this because I'm getting creeped out.
Handle the bug. Oh, jeez. Well, I'll just keep telling everybody about these disgusting chocolates. All right, let me tell you a little story. They had one that was filled with port wine, and I thought, oh, that's intriguing. That sounds promising. No, terrible. Another one was with Irish whiskey. Horrible. Another one was with some kind of bourbon. I thought, oh, bourbon is hot. This is going to be amazing. Not hot. Terrible. All of them, terrible. I actually couldn't even swallow the whole thing. I had to spit it out. And that's about as far as this story about chocolate has to go. Is Morgan, are you back yet?
Moving and creeping out. Oh. Okay, hang on to your chocolates. I'll be right back. I gotta dump this.
Oh, my God.
It's like one of those creepy crawlies with like the 20 legs.
Like a spider? Are you killing a spider over there?
No, I'll be back.
Oh, my God. So this next segment of our show is called How Are You? So how are you? Well, Morgan is off killing a bug and I'm boring you guys talking about chocolates and things.
Okay.
You're back?
Yeah. Let's talk about this guest here because I've got rid of the creepy crawly and now I'm just having anxiety times 1,000. I saw it coming with like its 900 legs towards me and I was like, oh God.
Well, hey, speaking of creepy crawlies and getting rid of them, that's exactly what our guest today essentially did in her life. I don't know that we want to refer to exes as creepy crawlies, but hell, maybe we'll learn her story. So we are speaking to a fellow podcaster tonight. Her name is Kate Anthony. She is the host of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, and she's got a book coming out called The D Word, And it's not my favorite D word. It stands for divorce. Womp womp. But we are going to have a chit chat with her about why did she write this book? What's the point? Who's the book for? And what is she doing to help people based on everything that she's been through?
Yeah. And she's like the OG, right? Of the podcasting in the divorce space. She's been at it longer than we have, which we haven't really been at it that long, but we've kind of enjoyed the time that we have.
Yeah. She has been on the scene for a while. And spoiler alert, she comes from a performing background. And we're going to learn about that when we chat with her, because she has appeared on several TV shows that I guarantee every single one of you listeners have heard of before. So you ready? Now that we've killed all the bugs and we've ruined Costco's image, let's talk to Kate, shall we? Okay. So like I just said a few moments ago, we're having a conversation today with a fellow divorce podcaster who actually has a really similar mission to us. She helps people navigate this divorce process in a whole lot of an easier way and helps to make it a lot less scary. And I really like the fact that we're having a chance to chat with her so that we can offer our listeners a different voice, a different perspective, because you guys hear from us all the time on what we think and how I handled this situation. And now we're going to hear from someone else who can shed some light on this super, super fun topic of divorce.
Exactly. I am thrilled that Kate is coming on our show. I've listened to her podcast. It's informative. She's likable. She has a lot of background to talk about. She brings on really fabulous guests. And like I said, Andrea, before we even started this segment, she's like the OG in the divorce podcast space. And she's actually like young. So it's kind of cool to have her on and talk about her podcast and what she has going on. So I'm excited.
I can hear her laughing in the background. So we are talking about, you mentioned her first name before. We're talking to Kate Anthony. Her show is called The Divorce Survival Guide Podcast. And she's written a book that's about to come out called The D Word. Kate Anthony, hi. Welcome to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Hi. Thank you guys so much for having me and for that awesome intro. And Morgan, thank you for telling people that I'm young. I'll the check is in the mail.
Oh my gosh, they're great. We are thrilled, Kate. And before we get into the divorce space and all the stuff.
Yeah.
Andrea actually mentioned to me when you were coming on the podcast, she kind of gave me a rundown and she said that you were actually an actor and you were on Grey's Anatomy.
It is true. I was an actor for like the first 30 years. I started really young. So I like to say that my career, the bookends were the first 5 years were on Sesame Street and then the last 5 years were on Grey's Anatomy. And there was a lot of stuff in between. That was sort of my last, like, okay, I think I'm done with this. And it's actually not, it really is part and parcel of my divorce in a way, because, being an actor in certainly in film and television. I grew up in theater, so I've always found television to be weird anyway. But being an actor is very much like being in an abusive relationship, because, you know, there's ghosting. They don't, you know, you go in for an audition, you basically like, you know, leave your soul on the floor and they're like, thank you. And then they never call you to tell you that you didn't get the job or why you didn't get the job or anything. There's nothing. They're just, you just move on with your life. And there's a lot of ways in which actors just don't have a lot of power and personal sort of agency. And it's one of those things that when I left my marriage, I also sort of cut out all of the areas in my life that felt like that to me.
And I'll say, because people who listen to this show know that that's my background as well. I grew up doing musical theater. Then I went into comedy. I was a Second City girl. I did that. And I talk about a lot how my background in acting prepared me really well for my first marriage, because you are so used to control and all of these, because you have very little liberties, right? People think like, oh, you're a creative. That's so fun.
Right. Exactly.
Like I'm on a leash. I'm being told what to do.
Right. And like I said, like in theater, I think you have a lot more freedom, and certainly in improv, like there's a lot more creative freedom, but in television as an actor, you're like, go there, stand there, say that, and we're moving on.
Right.
So, and the industry as a whole is just awful for actors.
Okay,
so
but before we get into real stuff, were the men on Grey's Anatomy as good looking as in person as they were on the screen?
Yeah.
Ha! No.
What about the guys on Sesame Street? What was Snuffleupagus like in real life?
So Snuffleupagus,
huge.
Here's the deal. He's huge. He hung from the ceiling.
Oh my God, I love that you just said huge and then hung. I was waiting.
He was so huge.
Damn.
Oh my God.
Okay, no, now tell me for real.
They did. So they hung him from the ceiling because the Muppet was too big for, it was the only place they could store him, was like hanging from the rafters in the studio. And so as a child, you know, I, despite what Morgan thinks, I am from the era before they realized that gaslighting Big Bird into like saying that like his imaginary friend didn't exist when we all knew he did. So they were still gaslighting him. So but they were like, you know, Snuffleupagus, you're like, Big Bird, you're, you know, your imaginary friend doesn't exist and blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, he's right there. I was like three. I was like, but he's right there. He's hanging from the ceiling.
Oh my God. What an interesting background.
So it was pretty great. I was of the Mr. Hooper era. So it was long before he died. And I worked a lot with Frank Oz. I have a lot of, there's some videos that are still on YouTube of me and Grover, which are just so cute. And like Ray Charles came and we did like a whole like ABCs with Ray Charles, which is insane.
That.
Totally insane. Yeah. It was a great experience.
Jesus, screw our outline. Let's just get into this. Okay. So talk me through this. So you had a background in acting. We know you got married at some point and then you were no longer married. And I'm guessing that led you to this platform that you now host about divorce. Yeah. So fill me in there.
So, well, when I got divorced, so my ex and I had the kind of marriage that made people really uncomfortable. It was not, you know, we didn't hide our sort of animosity and it was really uncomfortable and, and so it was a really volatile, terrible marriage. It was emotionally abusive. And so when we got divorced, we actually, certainly in the first couple of years, did things great. We were really good friends. We did holidays together. And I don't recommend this right away. It was a mistake, but at first it seemed like we were doing this amazingly.
And you have a child together,
and
right?
We have a son. So that was really the impetus. He was 3.5 years old and we were like, well, okay, we're going to, and as he said to our mediators who were like, are you guys sure you want to get divorced? Cause you guys get along really well. What are we doing here? And he said, look, we worked so hard to make our marriage work. By God, we're going to make this divorce work. And we did. We took all of the tools that we learned in years of therapy and all of the things, and we put it to work, communicating through our divorce. But people started coming to me and saying, like, how did you do this? Like, you guys were terrible together. How did you guys become friends? And so people started asking me, and eventually I was sort of having to look at what I was going to do next with my life because I knew I did not want to continue acting. I knew I wasn't going to be driving hours a day to auditions and callbacks and all the stupid, you know, all the shit that we have to do. I was just like, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm a grown up. And I have a kid. And so someone said, people were like, you should be a therapist. And I was like, I would rather eat rocks. And then they said, well, what, a friend of mine said, what about coaching? And she was a coach. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so I went back to school because I knew I needed, like, what was my next venture. And I, when I went back to coaching school, it was with the express purpose of becoming a divorce coach, which, by the way, did not exist when I started.
What year was this in?
This was 2010, 11.
Okay, so this was right before the big coaching boom.
Yes.
Right. When everyone decides, everyone's coming out of the woodwork and now everyone's like, a coach. You were way before this movement.
OG.
I was before that. I was
another OG.
Another OG moment. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to be a divorce coach. I'm going to coach people on how to have, like, you know, healthy divorces, regardless of how their marriages were. So that's how that's how it started. There's a long meandering path of my career because, again, I was doing something no one had ever heard of.
Right.
But now it's a thing.
So along with the coaching that you do, you have a very successful podcast. And with the pot, I mean, you've got a platform on social media, you have your services, you have a voice, right? You are a voice in this space, much like we are. And when, you know, we all live together in this, I wouldn't say oversaturated sandbox, but it's becoming crowded. There's a lot of us doing this stuff,
it's
right?
It's getting crowded.
Yep. And there's a lot of us who kind of know what we're doing and why we do this. And I feel like you fall into that category. We fall into that category. And then there's a lot of other stuff that kind of just feels like noise. So what I want to know from you, it's true. I'm sorry. Okay. Hate me. It's the truth.
No, I don't hate you.
It's the truth. Not everyone knows what they're doing out here.
Yeah.
We do. You do. How would you describe your voice?
My voice. I would say I am, I'm a no bullshit loving truth teller. You know, my friends call me an instigator. I do, you know, people have said to me, and I guess I'm only repeating what people have said to me, right? Because I don't know how my voice, I'm just me, I'm just saying the truth, right? But I tell the truth. And I tell uncomfortable truths. But I don't drop them and run, right? So when I work with my clients, if I'm having to hold them to account for something, if I'm having to say to them, actually what you just said, you know, I will call people out on things that I'm like, gently, right? Call them in, I guess, right? Like, well, actually, I think that when you did that, what you were like, that was not the best for your kid, right? And so I have no problem telling the truth in that way. But like, how else are we going to learn, right? And it's loving. I say like, actually, you know, I think that there's a better way to do this. Maybe next time, you know, it should look like this. I just, you know, my voice is honest, direct, cursing.
I can tell that Morgan has a comment here, something you've said.
Well, and I appreciate what she's saying because I think it takes a unique person to be honest with somebody who's paying you. And at the end of the day, that's what I do in my practice. Not everybody likes it, but I'm not there to be a best friend. I'm there to get them through the toughest time of their life legally. And when I see missteps, I have to say it. It's all about the way you say it, but I need them to know we can't have this misstep again. And here's why. And I appreciate
it. Yeah, especially in your job. Right. Especially in your job, like this has legal implications. Like you 100%. Are now like kind of, you know, you're destroying the strategy that we've spent this time creating. Like, absolutely. You have to. And, you know, I think people come to me. I guess I would be mad if I hired a coach who wasn't going to, if I was paying money to someone and they were just blowing smoke up my ass, like I would consider that a waste of money.
Well, we talk about it on our platform, actually, just the other day, I did a post about your attorney is not supposed to be your yes man, right?
Mm-mm.
And the same thing with a coach, right? You don't need, your friends can be your yes people. Like, if you want to go out and have drinks and have a bunch of people hype you up and rah, rah, you're the best, we love you, great. Those are for friends. Mm-hmm. You know, like, people that you're paying should be a voice of reason. So you said something a moment ago that I want to go back to. You mentioned the phrase, call them out. And then you said, oh, well, maybe it's more call them in. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, we're getting therapeutic over here.
Well,
and that made me think of in the very beginning of your book, which I've been flipping through the manuscript and reading as much as I can, because as I told you, I am known to sit at a bar and like read a full book. Like, if I get into something, I get into it. And there was something that you mentioned in the very beginning about a type of therapy that you did that I honestly had not heard of. And I was embarrassed to admit that, because I like to think of myself as someone who's fucked up enough that I've had all kinds of therapy.
Yes.
But I have not had this. It was called Imago. Am I saying that right?
You are saying it
Imago.
Right.
So for those who don't know what I'm talking about, it's spelled I-M, like mom, A-G-O. What the hell is Imago therapy, and why were other people – you also said that there were other couples there for it.
So Imago therapy – yes. What? So Imago therapy is a very specific kind of therapy. It was created by a man named Harville Hendricks, and it's been around for decades. It is it's a way of communicating, really. It's a form of couples therapy where the premise of it is that your partner is your imago match, which means that they're sort of the mirror image of you, in that your triggers are going to trigger them. Mm-hmm. The things that you need from them are going to trigger. So your childhood wounding is going to trigger their childhood wounding, the things that you need. The idea is that we choose our partners based on our childhood wounding in a sort of vain attempt to heal that wounding. So if I have a trigger or a childhood wounding around an alcoholic parent, this is why I date all the alcoholics, because if I can get my partner to change for me, my unconscious mind believes that it'll heal the childhood wound. And so if they get sober for me and they, you know, become the opposite of who they are for me, it'll heal me. Now, you would think that you would like, but you're not attracted to the guy who's already sober and right. Because that's not the imago match.
It's too easy. Yeah.
It's too easy. So in imago therapy, you, through a very structured communication style, you express your hurt, right? So if it's my, if I say, I'd like to have an imago dialogue, is now a good time? So you always ask permission. And so then I am the sender and you are the receiver, if you say yes. And then I say, it really hurt me the other day when you said X. And as I'm sending this information, you hold up your hand and you mirror exactly what I'm saying, the exact words that I'm saying. So you say, it really hurt you the other day when I said X.
This sounds like a Meisner technique.
Do you? Yes.
Right? This sounds like when I was in acting school and we would repeat back and forth, I have the red sweater. Uh-huh. I have the red sweater.
I have the red sweater.
I have the red sweater.
Uh-huh. So it feels like that, right? But what ends up happening is, and at the end of it, they summarize what you've said. And it's a real lesson in empathy and listening. You're not allowed to interject your point of view. Your only job as the receiver is to fucking shut up and listen and mirror what your partner is saying. And then your partner can ask for a behavior change request. So say, so, you know, it would really help the triggers my childhood wounding of X, right? So then we're keeping it in I language. I'm not saying you're at fault and you're doing this and blah, blah, blah. You're saying I have a wound and it would really help my childhood wounding if you would change this behavior. And then the partner gets to say yes or no, or that's really hard for me, but I'm going to give it a shot. Anyway, so that's sort of what imago is. Morgan, you clearly you want something to say.
I have not heard of imago therapy at all, but to me, it sounds like some woo-woo shit. But
I was waiting for that.
Andrea and I always we just go there if we think. But
no, totally. I hear it.
But if it helps, we're a big fan of therapy on this podcast. So God bless if it helps anybody. Fine.
I lean way more woo woo than Morgan ever will. And I'm like, kill a chicken and swing it over my head. Okay.
Yep.
Where is it?
Yep. We've done some way more woo woo stuff than imago therapy.
Yeah, this is not woo woo. This actually it is actually based in like, you know, psychology and science. But I get it. I get what you're saying.
You do. But where I'm stuck, I need to, I have two questions. Where I'm stuck is you were in therapy with other couples, so I want to know how that went.
I was gonna get to that.
Okay,
right?
And then I want to know what you learned from it, from this therapy.
Yeah, great, perfect. Okay, so, so we did this process with a couples therapist, you know, just the two of us. But they also had a group. And so it was us and like three, four other couples. And every Saturday we would go for lower every other Saturday, I think, for like 3 hours. And we would go. And so other couples would have these conversations as well. And we got really close with each other, right? Like this is like really intimate stuff. And all of those couples are still together. By the way, it worked for all of them. There are reasons it did not work for me. It was actually the process of being in this process with other couples was really kind of beautiful because you just get to see other people going through similar things and you don't feel quite so alone or isolated or whatever. So it was an interesting process to do together. I think it also kind of holds you to account a little bit.
I can see that. I could see that.
Because you're making a behavior change request. I am asking you to do something very specific. And in 2 weeks, we're going to revisit.
Right.
And so I think it's really important. And so, you know, what we learned, Morgan, was to communicate really, really beautifully. And in our first mediation session, the first thing on the table was the house. Who's keeping the house? And my ex-husband said, I'd like to have an imago dialogue. Is now a good time?
Oh.
Right in front of our mediator. And I was like, I mean, I guess it's as good a time as any. And so he presented his point of view on the matter, on him keeping the house. In this very structured dialogue so that I wasn't going to like jump in. I knew like at that point, it was like, okay, I'm just here to mirror. And he did. And at the end of the dialogue, I was like, you're right. No. You should keep it. So
I wonder what that mediator was thinking. The mediator
was
like,
he literally said, what the fuck is going on? What did you guys just do? And we're like, oh, we had an imago dialogue. It's our therapy, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, okay.
I'm sure that the mediator was like, this is so weird. And holy shit, it worked.
It totally worked. We learned to communicate. We learned to hear each other. And it didn't save our marriage because, you know, he didn't learn to hear my request to not abuse me or cheat on me. Mm-hmm. But he...
Hate when that...
There were...
Whatever. You win some, you lose some.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
But it really, so we really did learn to communicate. And that was why at the end of our divorce, our mediators were like, are you guys sure you wanted to get divorced? Like, this is crazy. You guys, this is the best divorce we've ever been a part of. And we were like, no, really, we're sure. But
so, okay. So let's back up for a second. I mentioned that this whole imago bit came out of the prologue of your book. So let's talk more about the book.
Okay.
So the D word.
Yes.
I'm sad to know that it doesn't stand for big dicks and it has to stand for divorce, but that's okay. In my mind,
it was almost called the big D, but then we did some Google comparisons and we were like, oh.
Which makes me think of the country song because I'm from Texas. And so whenever I hear the big D, do you know that song?
No.
What? Kate, I'm going through the big D and I don't mean Dallas. I'm going through the Big D and don't mean Dallas. Yeah. No, I got the Jeep. She got the palace. Oh God. You guys have no culture. Country. Okay. So the Big D. I want to know. We have so many questions, obviously, about it. But the number D word.
The D word, not the Big D. Yes.
Oh, my God. See, I said it. The D it's word, fine. Not the Big yeah. D. God. Okay. Who's this book for?
This book is for women who are, you know, the whole title is the D word, making the ultimate decision about your marriage. Mm-hmm. So it's for women who are trying to decide whether to stay or go. It's for women who are sort of teetering on the edge and they're kind of losing their minds. They can't figure out, like, is it me? Is it him? You know, he says I'm a miserable person. Maybe it is just me. Or is it the marriage that's making me miserable? Or is it the institution of marriage that, you know, or is it the dumpster fire of the world today? Is it, right? So it's women who are, like, have these perseverating questions just running through their mind. And they're not happy. And they want to know if they should stay or go.
It's interesting because, I mean, obviously you wrote this for a reason, because you're picking up on the same stuff that we pick up on, that our largest listenership right now are from people mm-hmm. who don't know what the hell to do. And it's the largest pool of people who message, who DM me personally on Instagram, not really even from our podcast page, but on my personal platform. They say, like, Andrea, how did you know? Like, you know, I speak openly about my panic attacks and my struggle with panic disorder. And they'll say, when were you able to pinpoint that to your marriage? What did you do? Because I don't know what to do.
Right. Absolutely.
And I just find it so interesting. So when I was going through the book, I was reading different parts and I'm thinking, like, okay, I want to have Kate read some things to the listeners that that really stand out to me, because I want to just help people wrap their arms around what the feel of this book is. Because honestly, we bring so many people on the show who have written things, and I think it's hard for people to know when they hear about this stuff, like, is this going to help me or is this not going to pertain to me at all?
Yes.
So, right. I would love for you to read the part where you really map out what it can feel like when someone is contemplating, should I stay or should I go?
Oh, thank you. I would love to. I appreciate it. It's yes. Okay. I will do that.
I'm ready.
When you think about leaving your marriage, you may feel like you're doing something wrong. You may feel like reading this book is subversive. And in some ways it is. First of all, you're probably doing it behind your partner's back, so there's bound to be some shame or guilt associated with this journey. But most of all, I believe that women looking deeply at their marriages and making strong and empowered choices for themselves is a subversive act. It's a radical act of rebellion for a woman to want to find happiness in her life and to put her own happiness first.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. I know how I feel hearing that. Mm-hmm. I know how I felt when I read it. Mm-hmm. But I want to know, like, Kate, where did that come from for you?
I think it really came from the women that I, in my community, from doing this work for over a decade and listening to women's stories and recognizing, and also as a radical, you know, sort of rabid feminist, that I understand what women, you know, that this culture is so designed for women. We are socialized from birth to put our needs behind those of men. And when we become mothers, it's even more so. We have to, you know, the badge of honor is how much we sacrifice for our children. And so the very idea that we get to say for ourselves, that we get to put our happiness above even that of maybe our kids, which I think is actually not true, but, you know, in the moment, in the short term, we're making a choice for all these other people that's going to disrupt the lives of other people, that we get to do that is completely a radical notion.
No, right. I agree with that, actually, because, and you know, we don't cater just to women, but we cater to men as well. But I see it a lot with women, especially women who are stay at home. And I also have some men who are stay at home, mm-hmm. and they feel that, you know, their life is not their own anymore, almost.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And it's awful to see them in that spot, and them making a decision for themselves, you know, legally, mm-hmm. makes them feel very mm-hmm. guilty. So I'm glad that you address that in the
absolutely.
Book. And, you know,
not to mention,
go ahead, Andrea.
I was just going to touch on the, you know, because Kate mentioned kids and how people tend to get on a high horse about everything I do, everything that I sacrifice for these kids, which leads me to the massive misconception that staying in your marriage for the kids is a noble choice. And my God, you guys, right? No, please don't do that.
No. First of all, like, what kind of pressure are you putting on your children? right? But more than that, it's just, you know, the research does not support that being good for them. And, you know, you deserve to be happy. You need to be happy. And you also need to model a healthy, happy relationship to your children, and certainly not a toxic one.
And before we even get to that part, right? Because yes, as the children get older, they're picking up on everything. Well, of course they're picking up on everything at any age, but if you are living in an unhealthy, toxic environment, babe, your kids are living in that same environment. They're getting of that. It's not the happy home you think it is.
That's right. And so many women think that they're hiding it, that we're, you know, that it's right. And you're not, because these are the most intuitive creatures like on the planet.
And children, 100%. And it's not to say, moms, that you're not doing a good job attempting to hide it. It's that you cannot hide it. It is impossible.
That's right. Not to get too woo, but the energy in the house, like, you can feel that shit. It's palpable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Tension.
Right.
Yeah. See? Yeah.
I want to ask you about something else that you mentioned in the book that I found really interesting. And it made a lot of sense. But when I read it, I thought, why the hell is she talking about this? Like, what does this have to do with anything?
Oh, good.
And then I'm like, oh, wait, I get it now. And it's about the inner critic.
Oh, yeah.
So you do this whole bit about a bit. It's not a show.
A bit.
A bit. Ta-da. You have this whole shtick in your book, Kate. What's with the shtick? you're talking about an inner critic, right? And honestly, when I first got to that part, I'm like, what is she? Did we switch to a different book all of a sudden? Like, what are we talking? Is this a mindset book now? What is this?
Yes.
But
partly.
But for everyone that's wondering what the hell I'm talking about, can you kind of go through what an inner critic is, how you know if you are struggling with that, and why that's important?
Okay. So it's important because, right, when you're trying to decide whether to stay or go, you have to discern whose voice you're listening to inside of yourself, right? You're getting tugged in two directions. I need to stay or I need to go. And in order to know which part of yourself to listen to, you have to kind of pull those apart. And before we do the inner critic work, I do inner guide work, right? Connecting women to their intuition and connecting to that part of themselves that knows. And we all have that. Women's intuition is scientifically been proven to be stronger than men's. We are incredibly intuitive beings, and the entire patriarchal system has been designed around getting us disconnected from that part of ourselves. And then but then once you connect with your inner guide, all the other shit starts coming in, right? The critics start yammering away at you. So you have to know, it's important to turn towards the inner critic so that you can actually hear it, so that you know that it's a critic, right? So how you know it's a critic is, that you have a feeling that things are black and white, good or bad, right? It's either or, very, very sharply distinct. You can feel confused and cloudy, like you have brain fog. You want to run and hide, jump under the covers and not deal with anything. You have a negative self-image. You believe other people's negative assessments of you. Things feel unnecessarily complicated. And you've been circling over the same problem over and over and over and over again. And those are some signs that the inner critic is sort of in charge. If you're feeling that way, if you're like, it's either good or bad, or like, I don't know what to decide. I feel overwhelmed. I want to go to bed. It could be that your inner critic is the one running the show right now.
All right. So I'm feeling like this describes all of us, or at least, you know, during the day I could be,
it does.
Yeah. I could like be in any of these categories depending on the hour. So how is this harmful or helpful?
Yeah. So we all have an inner critic. We will always have an inner critic. No one will ever be done with an inner critic. It'll always, right? We always have them. And it's helpful to, the more we know about our inner critic, like they're kind of like a tape running in the background all the time. And the more we turn towards that and actually listen to it and distinguish it, the more we can manage it. The more we can say, oh, I see. That's like echoing my mother's voice from when I was a child. And that's actually not the truth. Okay, cool. Thanks. You can go sit in the corner and play with your ball of yarn for a minute. I got shit to do. But if we're just being, you know, if it's just yammering away and we just feel bad all the time, it's in control. Right? So inner critics are not helpful. Sometimes they think they are, right? The inner critic is sort of like really kind of is trying to maintain the status quo. A lot of it is trying to protect you. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they're not all that helpful. But turning towards it and learning about it and listening and identifying where does this come from? This is my husband's voice. That's not me. That's him. That's not true.
And again, this work would be really helpful for people in that position of deciding, okay, where am I at? What do I do from here? Right? Because that's when you are totally clouded and torn in different directions, because it's not always a clear-cut answer, because life is not black and white, right? No, we are living in a world of 50 shades of gray minus all the kinky sex. I mean, most of us.
Right.
Yeah. So in the book, you reference a lot of other authors. You reference a lot of other relationship experts, mental health professionals, like books that I've read, people that I have studied. And so I was curious to know who have been some of the most influential.
It's a great question. There's so many. I think one of my favorite books of all time is called Facing Codependence by a woman named Pia Melody. And I think Pia Melody's work has been some of the most influential for me, because she really deals with underlying trauma and gets to the source of what's up. So, you know, that's not like a big sexy name, but it's, I think, you know, from a clinical perspective, incredible. The work of Emma Katz and her research on coercive control in mothers and children, unbelievable. Oh my gosh, who else? I mean, I have so many books on my shelves now. Glennon Doyle, obviously, you know, she writes about similar stuff from a completely different perspective. And I think she's just, her writing is just breathtaking. I don't know. Gosh, so many.
I love it.
There's so many.
Because if you can't see her, obviously, but she's like looking behind her, looking on her bookshelf.
I'm looking at my books.
I love it.
I know.
I'm trying to categorize her library.
Yeah, totally. It's color coded. So it's hard. I mean, there's so many people. I mean, my friend Christina McGee, who runs a certification program for becoming a co-parenting specialist, which I've done, and her work on co-parenting is incredible. Susan Guthrie, of course, is one of my dearest friends, and you know, I could go on and on. My colleagues, you know, we are in this space with some just amazing humans.
Yeah,
I agree.
And I love it, right?
I'm just so glad that you created actually a book about staying or going, because I don't think enough people have hit this topic. And I think it would help people feel less alone when they're making this big decision in their life. So I want to know, and I know everyone wants to know, where can we find this fabulous book and when?
Thank you. Well, so it comes out December 26th, and it'll be available all the places. I have a page on my website. My website is kateanthony.com. And there's a page on my website, kateanthony.com/dword. And on there are some suggestions of how to purchase the book in ways that might be a little bit more on the DL. Mm-hmm. Because this is not a book, if you are still with your partner and you're trying to decide whether to stay or go, and you know, you don't necessarily want this in your shared Amazon order history, right? So I do have some suggestions. It's not rocket science, but I have some suggestions for how to get it and other booksellers where you can get it. So it's available everywhere.
That's awesome.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that's a huge bucket for a lot of people.
Yep.
And I found this conversation so interesting, and I'm so glad that we were able to give this insight to our group of listeners and just give them as many tools as possible. And I think that it's great that you're offering one more important tool into this community, because it is ongoing. Everybody needs help. And as times change and we all evolve, the help evolves, the support evolves, the way that we get our support evolves. And I'm proud of you. As funny as that sounds, because
I love it. Thank you.
I mean, great. Really, really, really good for you. And thank you so much for being another really important voice here, because this might be a crowded sandbox of a lot of people playing, but we need people here helping each other and supporting each other and helping people through what Morgan described before is one of the hardest transitions in someone's life.
Absolutely.
But one of the most important. And for those of you listening who you're thinking, oh fuck, this transition is 100% worth it. So keep going.
100%.
Keep swimming.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. So finally, a book about someone thinking about what to do, because I feel like it's a space that's really not dealt with enough. We're always talking about the middle of a divorce or starting or the end. And we never talk about right before it and what people are going through. So you know what? I'm proud of her too. Good for her. And I'm so happy for her. And I hope the book is wildly successful.
Yep. And as always, my friends, we will have direct links in the show notes of where you can go and get your hands on the D word. And speaking of needing to get information on the DL, guys, this is exactly why we started our Not Quite Ready for Divorce private community on Patreon. So it is $4.99 a month, and you can listen to every single episode of our show privately, meaning that it's not going to get downloaded to your device. You don't have to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. So your partner will not know that you are listening to a show called How Not to Suck at Divorce. We are also going to offer some deeper dive interviews, bonus material. It's a platform where you can also ask questions privately. So we are doing everything we can on our end to support you, because you deserve that support.
Exactly. And if you like our podcast, please rate and review us. It means the world to us. Share it with anyone that you know that could use it. Sharing is caring, obviously, with other friends who are going through similar things. And remember this, we always talk about it. Divorce is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Some days are literally day by day or hour by hour. And that's okay. That doesn't mean you're not going to get up the next day and hopefully have a better day.
That's right. And guys, please know that You're not the only one going through this. As awful as your day might seem, there are other people who are right alongside you, and we are alongside you. On the days when you feel so low, so frustrated, so angry, so sad, that's the day to binge listen to some episodes. If you're going into the holidays right now and you've got a long drive ahead of you, listen to the show. Let us be your buddies. Make sure that you're following us on our social channels. We try so hard to bring you funny and relevant material to make you giggle, make you think, and help you feel less alone.
That's right.
You can do this, my friends.
Remember, yeah. You know what? We always say it, but you've got this.
And we have got you. For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.